Hello and welcome. You are listening to a 30-minute summary of context engineering, the discipline of deciding which tokens go into a language model's window. It comes from a research wiki of 44 linked notes, and it is the middle of three versions. There is a 3-minute overview and a full audiobook of about 2 hours and 50 minutes. This one stands on its own. By the end, you should have the vocabulary of the field, the evidence for why it exists, the 4 things you can actually do about it, and an honest sense of how much any of it has been measured. There are 5 chapters. Let us begin with a result that should be more unsettling than it usually is. Researchers took a conversational question answering task and ran a model on it twice. In both runs, the information needed to answer was present and correct. In the second run, that information was surrounded by a large amount of other material that happened to be irrelevant. Nothing was removed. Something was added. And performance dropped noticeably. That gap is the whole subject. In this chapter, I want to do 3 things. First, explain why this discipline exists at all, because the reason is structural and not fashionable. Second, show you the evidence that models do not use their context the way we assumed. And third, be honest about how strong that evidence actually is. Let us start with the structural reason. A language model is a stateless function. You give it a context, it produces a distribution over outputs. That is the entire interface. It does not remember the last call. Everything it knows about your problem at the moment it produces a token is either baked into its weights or present in the context you handed it. Now think about what you control when you deploy one. You do not control the weights. You did not train the model, and you are not going to. What you control is the context. That is the whole surface area of engineering that remains on your side of the line. This is the first idea to carry through this summary. The context is the only lever, which means the quality of the context is not one factor among several. It is the entire optimization problem. If that were the end of it, this would be a short recording. Write a good prompt, hand it over, done. What changed is agents. A chatbot answering one question has a context a person wrote once and probably reviewed. An agent runs a loop, it calls a tool, gets a result, decides what to do next, calls another tool. Each of those steps injects material into the window. One production system reports around 50 tool calls for a single task, with an input to output ratio near 100 to 1. The agent reads enormously and writes very little. And nobody writes turn 47. The loop writes it. The context of a running agent is not something a human authored. It assembles itself at runtime, unsupervised, according to rules somebody set up months ago. That is when a craft becomes a discipline. Now the evidence, because there was an obvious response to all of this, and it was wrong. When context windows grew from a few thousand tokens to hundreds of thousands and then to millions, the natural reaction was to stop worrying. If it all fits, put it all in. That hypothesis has been tested. The most useful body of work here comes from the research team at Chroma, under a name that stuck, context rot. They evaluated 18 models across 4 families. And the methodological move is the contribution. They held the difficulty of the task constant and varied only the length of the input. That isolates the effect of length from the effect of difficulty, which the standard benchmark does not do. The summary finding is that models do not process context uniformly. Performance becomes progressively less reliable as input length grows. Let me give you 3 of their experiments, because each teaches something different. The first varied how semantically similar the target information was to the question. When the connection was lexically obvious, models held up well even at long lengths. When the connection required actual inference, performance degraded much faster. Which matters because real tasks are the inferential ones. A good score on the classic retrieval benchmark tells you almost nothing about your use case. The second introduced distractors, passages related to the question that did not answer it. The finding is the one I would most like you to keep. Even a single distractor reduced performance relative to the baseline, not 4, 1, and the effect was uneven, with certain distractors degrading performance far more than others. Think about what that does to retrieval. A system tuned for recall, one that brings in everything plausibly relevant, is not neutral. Every marginal document carries a measurable cost. The third is the experiment I described at the top. Conversational question answering with prompts of roughly 113,000 tokens, compared against a focused prompt of roughly 300 tokens containing only the relevant part. The gap was pronounced in favor of the focused version. That comparison is the cleanest validation of this discipline that exists. Same model, same question, relevant information present in both. Only the surrounding noise changes, and performance drops. That difference is exactly what context engineering is worth. There is a fourth result worth mentioning because of how strange it is. They compared coherent prose against the same sentences shuffled into random order. Across all 18 models, performance was better on the shuffled version. There is no accepted explanation. I mention it not because you can act on it, but because it shows that how you arrange a context is a variable in its own right, independent of what you put in it. Now, the honesty about evidence, which I promised. This field's practice runs well ahead of its theory. The most useful documents are engineering posts from teams operating agents at scale, describing what broke and what they did about it. That is valuable, and it is also reporting without a control group, on one workload, by people with something to sell. And there is a harder problem underneath. Work analyzing nearly 12,000 agent trajectories found that using a language model to judge whether an agent did good work performs only modestly better than chance on one benchmark, and essentially at chance on another. So the field is making architectural decisions with measurement instruments we know to be unreliable. That does not mean the techniques fail. Many are supported by directly verifiable outcomes. The code compiled, the test passed. But it does mean you should treat confident quality claims with caution, including some you will hear in this recording. Let me recap. The model is a stateless function with fixed weights, so the context is the only lever engineering has. Models do not use that context uniformly, and a single irrelevant distractor is enough to measurably degrade performance. And the strongest evidence in the field comes from industrial practice rather than controlled study, so hold the numbers loosely and the mechanisms firmly. In the next chapter, the vocabulary. What a context is actually made of, and why attention behaves like a budget rather than a container. If you ask most engineers what is in their agent's context window, they describe it as a conversation. Some instructions at the top, then a back and forth of messages. That picture is not wrong, and it is useless, in the same way that describing a program as a sequence of instructions is not wrong and gives you nothing to act on. This chapter gives you the vocabulary. Three things: what a context is made of, why attention behaves like a budget, and how the window has a geography that most people never think about. Let us take the components first. The productive move is to stop seeing the context as one thing and start seeing it as six things with different life cycles. Instructions, the system prompt and rules, static within a session, present on every single call. Knowledge, documents and retrieved passages, fetched per turn. Tools, definitions and schemas, mostly static. Memory, information carried across sessions. State, the condition of the agent and the task, mutating at every step. And the query, which is what the user actually asked, and usually the shortest thing in the window by a wide margin. Why bother separating them? Because each has a different governing strategy. Instructions should be curated by hand and should almost never grow. Knowledge should be retrieved as late as possible. Tools should be filtered. Memory needs a policy for forgetting, which almost nobody writes. If you treat all six as one undifferentiated pile of text, you will apply one strategy to all of them, and five of the six will be handled badly. There is a simpler version for daily use, from Adi Osmani, that reduces this to three. Instructional context, meaning the guidance and rules, knowledge context, meaning the domain information you retrieved, and tool context, meaning the results of searches, queries, and executions. I want to dwell on that third one, because it is what ruins agents, and it is the one almost nobody budgets for. Notice it is not the tool definitions, it is the tool outputs. Every time your agent runs a command or reads a file, the result lands in the context and stays. It accumulates without limit and without supervision. Instructions are written once by a person who thought about length. Tool outputs are produced by machines that did not. If you instrument only one thing after this recording, instrument how many tokens your tool results contribute per turn. In most systems with a problem, that is where the problem is. Now, the attention budget. Anthropic's engineering team proposed the framing I find most useful in this field. Treat the model's attention as a finite resource that gets depleted. Every token you add spends some of it, whether or not the window has room. That reframing does real work because it changes the question you ask about a piece of information. Not does it fit, but is it worth what it costs? Only the second is an engineering question. And it is not a metaphor invented for teaching. It follows from how attention works. In a transformer, every token can attend to every other token, so the number of pairwise relationships grows with the square of the number of tokens. Double the context, and you quadruple the relationships. The model's capacity to represent them is fixed. So as the context lengthens, that same capacity is spread across ever more pairs. Anthropic describes it as the model's ability to capture those relationships being stretched too thin. What you get is a structural tension between how much context you hold and how sharply the model can focus within it. Here is the part that matters most for how you work. The failure is a gradient, not a cliff. The degradation is not an abrupt limit. The model remains capable, it just becomes less accurate. Think about what that means operationally. Your system does not break, it quietly gets worse. No exception, no alert, nothing in the logs. A retrieval that used to be right is now right slightly less often. An agent that used to notice a constraint now sometimes misses it. And because nothing failed, nobody investigated. Two consequences follow. You have to measure for it deliberately, because it will not announce itself. And heuristics about utilization are more useful than heuristics about limits. Use up to the window size is a rule that will silently degrade your system. Keep utilization between 40 and 60% is a rule that will not. From the attention budget comes the central design criterion of the whole discipline. Find the smallest set of high signal tokens that maximizes the likelihood of the desired outcome. Pull that apart because people misread it. It is not a trade-off between size and quality. It is minimization of tokens and maximization of signal in the same direction at the same time. And the reason there is no tension is that any token without signal is pure cost. It costs money on every turn, it costs latency, and critically it costs attention subtracted from everything else. A token that contributes nothing is not neutral. It is taking capacity away from the tokens that matter. So the goal is the smallest set of high signal tokens, not the largest set of true ones. Truth is not the criterion. Relevance to this decision, right now, is. Now the last piece, which is less obvious. The window has a geography. It is tempting to think of it as a container. Something is inside or it is not. That model is wrong. Attention is not distributed evenly. Work from 2023, from Stanford, Berkeley, and Samia, measured how performance varies with the position of the relevant information, and found a curve shaped like the letter U models do best when the relevant material sits at the beginning or the end and degrades significantly in the middle. The detail that makes it important. This appears in models with windows of 4,000, 16,000, and 32,000 tokens. It is not a problem of very long contexts. It is structural and present at sizes considered small today. So a well-engineered context has a layout, not just contents. At the beginning, where attention is high, put what must always hold. The system prompt, the tool definitions, the hard constraints. At the end, also high attention, put what must be salient right now. The current objective, the state, the last observation, the question. And leave the middle, where attention degrades, for what tolerates degradation. Older history, supporting documents, tool results already consumed. That middle region is also, not coincidentally, the first place you should prune. Let me recap the three ideas. A context is six components with six different life cycles, and the one that destroys agents is tool output, because it accumulates mechanically and nobody budgets for it. Attention is a finite budget that follows from the quadratic structure of the mechanism, so context, size, and focus genuinely trade against each other. And the window has a geography, constraints at the front, current state at the back, degradable material in the middle. In the next chapter, the four ways a context goes wrong, and how to tell which one you are looking at. When an agent misbehaves, the useful question is not why is it bad. The useful question is which specific failure is this, because the common ones have different remedies, and applying the wrong one wastes a week. This chapter gives you a diagnostic vocabulary. Four failure modes, then two more that are special because they are failures of the standard solution rather than of the problem. Drew Brunig proposed the four that have become standard. Let me take them in turn. The first is context poisoning. A hallucination or an error enters the context and is then referenced repeatedly. The damage is not the original error, it is the persistence. Once inside the window, the model treats it as established fact and builds on it. The canonical example is an agent playing a video game that invented objectives which were not achievable, then spent dozens of turns pursuing them. The signal to look for. The agent insists on something that is simply false and keeps returning to it. This is the most expensive of the four, and here is why. A team working on coding agents puts it this way. A single line of incorrect information in an early phase becomes hundreds or thousands of lines of incorrect code. Context errors compound, which means the cost of poisoning is not proportional to the size of the error. It is proportional to how much work happens after it. The second is context distraction. The context grows so large that the model over-focuses on it and neglects what it learned during training. It shows up as repetition. The agent reproduces past actions instead of synthesizing new plans. There is a number attached. A team working on a game playing agent observed that beyond roughly 100,000 tokens, the model began favoring repetition of past actions over generating new plans. The signal, the agent loops and stops planning. The remedy is compaction and reciting the objective. The third is context confusion. Superfluous information in the window is used by the model to produce a low-quality response. The distinction from distraction is subtle, and it matters. Distraction is about volume. Confusion is about the presence of irrelevant material that the model decides to use anyway. This is exactly what the distractor experiment from the first chapter measures. And there is a second place it shows up that surprises people: tool definitions. Past roughly 30 tools, descriptions begin to overlap semantically. Past 100, one paper's phrasing is that failure is practically guaranteed. Two specific results are worth carrying. Using retrieval to select fewer than 30 tools has been reported to give 3 times better accuracy. And in another study, a smaller open model failed with 46 tools available, but succeeded with 19. Here is why that matters more now than it used to. Connect 3 or 4 capability servers to an agent, and you will cross 100 tools without anyone having decided to. Nobody chose it. It accumulated. The fourth is context clash. Information and tools accumulate that contradict other information in the prompt. Typical of long conversations where the user changed their mind, and of system prompts that collected contradictory rules over months. The model has no way to know which version wins. Those are the four, now the two that are different in kind. Suppose you accept everything so far and build the obvious remedy. Your system periodically summarizes what it has accumulated and carries the summary forward. Sensible, standard, and almost every framework does it. The next two failures are what that costs you. The first is brevity bias. Systems that prioritize concise summaries systematically discard valuable domain-specific insights. The mechanism is not a bug in anyone's implementation. Every summarization has an implicit objective that rewards concision. And what does a good summary remove? The rare case, the exception, the exact figure, the caveat. Now ask what makes an agent competent in a domain. Exactly those things. So you get an uncomfortable conclusion. A summary that is good by the standards of writing can be a bad context. those two objectives are not aligned. The second is context collapse. Iterative rewrites progressively erode detail across successive rounds. This is brevity bias in a loop. Each rewrite is a lossy compression, iterated enough and it converges to something generic. Picture the trajectory: 40 specific items, then 25 with some nuance gone, then 12 that are generic, then 5 vague principles, and eventually something that says be careful and check your work, which is true and worth nothing. The signal here is distinctive, and it is the opposite of what you expect from memory. The system becomes more generic with use rather than more expert. The fix from a paper on agentic context engineering attacks the act of rewriting itself. Never rewrite the whole context. Apply deltas, add this item, modify that one, remove the other. Untouched content stays exactly as it was. But there is a structural prerequisite worth generalizing beyond this case. You cannot apply deltas to prose. You can apply them to items. The framework represents context as itemized bullets with individual identity, because you cannot edit paragraph 3 precisely, but you can edit item 17 precisely. There is a nice independent confirmation. Anthropic, writing about long-running agents, describes using a structured data format rather than markdown for a feature checklist, specifically because the structured format prevents the model from inappropriately overwriting the file. Markdown invites rewriting. Structured data invites editing fields. Two teams, two problems, one principle. The structure of the artifact determines which operations are natural on it. Let me give you the diagnostic table, spoken. If the agent insists on a false fact, that is poisoning. Purge the segment and validate before persisting. If it repeats actions and stops planning, that is distraction. Compact and recite the objective. If it picks the wrong tool, that is confusion. Cut the tool set down. If it ignores a recent instruction, that is clash or position. Move it to the end and resolve the contradiction. If it performs well on short tasks and poorly on long ones, that is the length effect. Measure the curve and compact earlier. And if it becomes more generic the longer you use it, that is collapse. Switch from rewrites to deltas. Let me recap. 4 named failure modes with 4 different remedies, and poisoning is the expensive one because its cost scales with how much work happens after it. 2 more failures come from the standard solution. Summarizing well makes a worse context, and iterating that loss makes a system that gets more generic with use. And the structural fix is to represent persistent context as editable items rather than prose. In the next chapter, the remedies, and there are only 4 of them. Here is a claim that sounds too strong and turns out to be right. There are only 4 things you can do with a context. You can move information out of it. You can bring information into it. You can make what is already in it smaller. Or you can split it across separate contexts. Every technique in this field is a variation on one of those 4. The taxonomy comes from LangChain, and its value is that it is exhaustive. It gives you a place to put every technique you will encounter, and it tells you when you have not considered an option. The 4 are called write, select, compress, and isolate. Let me take them, and then give you the part that makes the framework operational, which is knowing which one to reach for. Write means saving information outside the window, so you can bring it back later. Within a task, that is a scratchpad. Notes that persist while the agent works, implemented as a tool that writes to a file or a field in the agent state. Across sessions, that is memory, and the standard typology has 3 kinds: episodic, meaning specific past experiences; semantic, meaning facts about the world or the user; and procedural, meaning how to do things. There is a striking data point here. Anthropic reported that adding a tool which does nothing, but let the model write something down, improved performance by as much as 54% on benchmarks for specialized agents. The tool performs no action and changes no state. The gain comes entirely from externalizing reasoning. And there is a design rule that turns this from lossy to lossless from the team behind the Manus agent. They treat the file system as structured, unlimited, persistent memory with 1 condition: compressions must be restorable. If you remove the contents of a web page from the context, keep the address. If you remove a document, keep the path. The context holds the pointer. The content lives on disk. That distinction is worth internalizing. Compression is lossy. Indirection is not. When you replace a document with its path, you have not lost the document, you have changed how you refer to it. A large fraction of what teams solve with summarization could be solved with a pointer instead, at no cost in fidelity. Select means bringing the right information into the window. This is where retrieval lives, but retrieval of documents is only one of three kinds. You select instructions, like the project conventions file a coding agent loads at the start of a session. You select tools, and applying retrieval to tool descriptions is where that threefold accuracy figure comes from. And you select knowledge, which is classic retrieval. There is a warning attached that is about product rather than engineering. LangChain documents a case where a consumer assistant pulled the user's location from its memories and injected it into images the user had asked for. The phrase used is that the user feels the context no longer belongs to them. Unexpected retrieval is a trust problem, not only a technical one. The dominant shift in how selection works is worth naming. The classic approach retrieves before you call the model. You guess what will be needed, fetch it, and hope. The newer approach puts lightweight identifiers in the window instead, and the agent loads what it needs when it turns out to need it. Anthropic makes the human comparison. We do not memorize entire corpora, we use external indexing systems. The advantage is that each observation informs the next decision, which a single-shot retrieval cannot do by construction. The disadvantage is that runtime exploration is slower. So effective systems do both, and the rule is clean. Preload what is small, stable, and almost always relevant. Leave for runtime what is large, volatile, or only sometimes relevant. Compress means keeping only the tokens the task requires. Two mechanisms, and the difference matters more than people think. Summarization uses a model to produce a shorter version. Trimming is heuristic filtering with no model involved. Drop old messages, drop consumed results, drop reasoning blocks. Which brings me to what I consider the most underused advice in this field. Before you summarize, clean. Anthropic asks a question that is hard to argue with. Once a tool has been called, why would the agent see the raw result again? Clearing tool results is described as the safest and lightest touch form of compaction. It is deterministic, it invents nothing, and it usually frees more tokens than the summary would have saved. The reported numbers on this. Context editing alone improved performance by roughly 29% over baseline, and combined with a memory tool, roughly 39%. Those are a vendor's figures on their own evaluation, so weigh them accordingly, though the gap between the two is itself informative. It suggests that writing things out has value independent of cleaning things up. Isolate means splitting the context across multiple spaces. Three ways in ascending cost. A state object with fields the model does not see until requested, which gives isolation with no infrastructure at all and is the cheapest and most underused option in the field. An execution sandbox where code runs and only selected results come back. And sub-agents with their own windows, which a research system has been reported to use effectively, at a cost of up to 15 times the tokens of a simple chat. Now the part that makes this usable, the order. Rank them by loss and cost from cheapest and safest upward. First, isolation with a state object, free and loses nothing. Second, write and select together, controlled loss and recoverable because the material still exists. Third, compression by trimming, deterministic loss, you know exactly what went. Fourth, compression by summarization, non-deterministic loss with a risk of invention. Fifth, isolation with sub-agents. No loss of detail, but a token multiplier and a risk of fragmentation. The principle that follows is the one I would apply as a default. Exhaust the lossless options before reaching for the lossy ones. Most systems in trouble have skipped straight to summarization because summarization is the technique everybody knows about. And they have never tried purging consumed tool results, which is free, deterministic, and usually recovers more. One more technique that belongs here because it works on the shape of a context rather than its contents. The Manus team has their agent rewrite a to-do file at every step. The file contains no new information. Its function is positional. It keeps the objective at the end of the context, in the high attention region, as the trajectory grows past 50 tool calls. It is the U-shaped curve from the previous chapter, used deliberately. And from the same source, the technique that surprised me most: keep the failures in the context. Leaving the wrong turns visible lets the model adapt its beliefs implicitly. Without visible errors, there is no evidence to learn from, which means a compaction that tidies away the dead ends is not neutral. It guarantees the agent will walk down them again. Let me recap. There are exactly four operations, and they differ enormously in what they cost you. The default policy is to exhaust the lossless options first, and the most commonly skipped one is simply deleting the tool results you already used. And two cheap tricks worth stealing: recite the objective at the end and stop cleaning up the failures. In the final chapter, Tools, Architecture, and an Honest Account of What Nobody Knows. Three things left: how to design the tools an agent uses, the open argument about running one agent or many, and an honest inventory of what this field does not know. Start with tools, because there is a validation criterion here that I find more useful than any checklist. Anthropic's phrasing. If a human engineer cannot clearly determine which tool to use, an artificial agent cannot be expected to do better. That is an operational test. Show your tool list to a colleague, give them three realistic tasks, and ask which tool they would use. If they hesitate, your agent will fail. The rules that follow are short. Budget the output, not just the input. Every tool needs a token ceiling and a policy for exceeding it, whether that is returning a structured summary with a pointer, truncating with an explicit marker, or writing to a file and returning the path. Return signal rather than raw data. The exit code and the lines containing errors, not the whole log. The four fields the agent can act on, not the entire response. Avoid functional overlap, because two tools that do the same thing guarantee the model chooses wrong some of the time. And make errors actionable, because the error stays in the context, so one that teaches nothing is a permanent waste of attention. Now the shift that changes the economics entirely. Consider a workflow that just moves a long document from one service to another. No analysis. In the ordinary pattern, where the agent calls one tool to read and another to write, the document passes through the model's context twice, once coming in, once going out. The model reads a long document twice and did not need to read it once. It was not analyzing it. It was moving it. The alternative is to present capabilities as code modules in a file system that the agent explores and let the agent write code that calls them. The data moves inside the execution environment and never enters the context. Anthropic reports that example going from roughly 150,000 tokens to about 2,000. That is not compression. The data took a different path. Why does it work? Because these models are far better trained at writing code than at orchestrating long sequences of structured tool calls. Writing a script has enormous training data behind it. Chaining 15 structured calls while maintaining state across a growing context does not. You are playing to the model's strength. The same principle explains why giving an agent a single command line tool is so efficient. One definition grants access to hundreds of capabilities the model already knows from training. You exploit prior knowledge instead of spending context describing the world. Now, one agent or many. This is a genuine open argument, and understanding why the two sides disagree is more useful than picking one. Cognition, the team behind a well-known coding agent, published a piece arguing against multi-agent systems. Their example: a parent agent splits a request to build a simple game into two parallel subtasks. One sub-agent builds a background in the style of a completely different game, having misread the brief. The other builds a character that matches neither. The final agent tries to combine two incompatible misunderstandings. Notice where the failure is. Neither sub-agent did bad work given what it could see. The failure is that the context was fragmented and the implicit decisions were incompatible. Anthropic, meanwhile, documents sub-agent architectures as standard practice. Specialized agents with clean windows, returning condensed summaries often in the range of 1 to 2,000 tokens, with a research system built this way substantially outperforming a single agent on queries requiring several parallel lines of investigation. Both hold and the reconciliation is what gets divided. In the failing case, sub-agents divide construction. They produce artifacts that must fit together, coupling is high, and if two disagree, the pieces do not join. In the succeeding case, they divide investigation. They produce independent findings, coupling is near zero, and if two disagree, you have two findings and both are useful. So the rule is, parallelize reading, serialize deciding. It is safe to distribute work whose output is information, and dangerous to distribute work whose output is shared state. That fits something from the main academic survey, which identifies an asymmetry. Models are notably competent at comprehending complex contexts, but show pronounced limitations, generating long, sophisticated outputs. Sub-agents that read a lot and return a little are doing exactly what models are good at. If you do build one, apply the principle that matters most from the critics. Share full traces rather than summaries, keep one decision maker, and require each sub-agent to report what it did not find. That last one is almost never specified, and without it, the parent cannot distinguish between this, does not exist, and nobody looked. Now, measurement and limits, which is where I want to leave you. The cheapest measurements are plain counters, and most teams have not done them. Tokens per component per turn, which tells you what is overflowing. Peak window utilization against a target near half. Cache hit rate. Number of compactions per task. Tokens of tool output never used. Tools offered versus tools actually used. None of these requires research. If you take one experimental design from this recording, take this one. Hold task difficulty constant and vary only the amount of context. Run a sample of your real tasks under three conditions, with the minimum sufficient context, with your current production context, and with 50% more plausible but irrelevant material. The drop from the first to the second is what your current context engineering is costing you. The drop from the second to the third is your margin. The result is usually uncomfortable. Most production systems sit at the second condition and could be much closer to the first. And the limit that constrains everything. Work analyzing nearly 12,000 agent trajectories found that no configuration of language model judges across 5 judges and 5 prompting strategies exceeded a discrimination score of about 65% on one benchmark and reached about 54% on another. On a measure where 50 is chance, that is barely better than a coin flip. So automatically evaluating whether an agent trajectory was good is essentially unsolved. Prefer verifiable outcomes. Did the test pass? Did it compile? Is the extracted figure correct? There is a related calibration point. A benchmark built specifically to measure whether models can decide what to retrieve, chaining file operations across multiple steps, finds the best model reaching about 74%. Even a model trained for this fails roughly 1 time in 4 at multi-step file navigation. So do not build systems that assume the agent will find what it needs. Give it maps. Let me close with the ideas worth keeping when the specific techniques age. The context is the only lever because the model is a stateless function with fixed weights. Every token spends an attention budget, so the goal is the smallest set of high signal tokens rather than the largest set of true ones. Failure is a gradient rather than a cliff, so it degrades silently and you must measure for it. What never entered the context costs nothing to manage, which makes the source the cheapest place to optimize. And discarding is safer than summarizing, because deletion only loses while summarization can invent. Windows will grow and models will improve. But as long as a model is a function from a context to a distribution over outputs, and as long as attention is finite, deciding what goes in that context will matter.